From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we take a look at things national and global with political commentator Mark Sloboda, who's a senior lecturer in geopolitical affairs at Moscow State University. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow Friday. Mark, a pleasure to have you as always.
Don, thanks for having me. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be on CPR.
So we got a lot of things in flux as we speak here on Friday, the 24th. Seems like an offensive by Trump in the battle between the White House and the rest of the government and media, basically, firing on two fronts, one with the claim, apparently, of some evidence of, the Trump transition team and perhaps the Trump campaign being widely surveilled by the Obama administration or some subset thereof. And also pushing back on the healthcare thing for what it's worth. And meanwhile, a whole lot of things in flux in the international scene. Tillerson with Z and all the questions, even foreign policy raising questions about whether China won some sort of a victory in the discussion there or swung Tillerson and the administration around. And the things, the introduction of more weaponry into, I think it was Estonia, the latest truck delivery, and of course everything going on around Korea. You want to pick it up wherever you want. Let's work through some of this.
Yeah, well, why don't we start on the domestic front? Something that, from my vantage point in Moscow, I now have the luxury of a substantial and hilarious remove from.
Detachment.
Speaking of someone who, after I served in the military, once volunteered for the Democratic Party, organized for the Democratic Party. So, domestically, Trump is both on the attack and on the defensive, and it is basically Trump and a close cadre against everyone. Trump against the world at this point, pretty much. His domestic health care agenda, I mean, obviously the Republican Party has wanted to repeal back Obama's health care plan derisively and quite appropriately called Obamacare for some time. But at negotiation is the form at which they want to roll it back.
And there's also the replace part. There's a good part of the Republican Party that don't want to replace Netton.
they don't want to replace it, or some of them don't, but Trump has promised to replace it in one form or another. Rather interestingly, one of Trump's campaign pledges was to do all of the spending that he promised, and you know, including the increased military spending and everything, without cutting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, without cutting these benefits. And that certainly wasn't something that made the congressional Republicans very happy.
Right.
And his stance on repeal and replace it with what, doesn't please the congressional Republicans much more than the passing of the bill by the Obama administration did in the first place. So he's issued an ultimatum, supposedly, that, you know, as we're speaking, today should be the day, I understand, that they vote on it. If not, he's ready to dump it and move on till he has a more cooperative Republican Congress.
And the implication there, of course, see, Trump doesn't run for re-election until 2020, but they're all up, or, you know, the whole House is up and a third of the Senate is up in 2018. And, you know, these are Republicans that have been running for 7 years saying we're going to repeal Obamacare. And if they don't repeal Obamacare, and they can't without Trump, then they got to go back to their voters. And you can guess that he's going to be helping out other candidates who are running. And he's got 2 years to develop something that will poll popular as an alternative to Obamacare, with candidates on the ground running against these people. And then he's got 2 years to shape it up before he's got to face the music. So this is really, you know, he has a strategic advantage that he's calling in here.
Yeah, Yeah, but he has to be real careful with that. He's playing with fire.
For sure, for sure.
Because right now the Democrats are slobbering with their multiple witch hunt trials now at this point going through the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. And it wouldn't take very much for the establishment GOP, particularly the congressional Republicans, to jump at the chance to throw Trump under the impeachment bus,
right,
and have him replaced with Pence.
Yep.
That, I mean, they would slobber at that. And any backing of other candidates within, you know, shall we say, more to the Trump, the new Trump wing to the Republican Party over more establishment ones would, of course, risk damaging candidates and witching more Democrats taking seats in the House,
right,
at least theoretically, you know, a few seats, a few swing seats. And that, of course, could also place Trump at risk of an impeachment. So when, right, when you say Trump has time, he does and he doesn't.
Yeah, he has time, but there are guns aimed at him from every angle.
There are guns aimed at him at every angle. And then we come to these, you know, right to the subject of these investigations. And there are at least two of them now going on in the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, and at least one investigation into the affairs being conducted by the FBI simultaneously. And one investigation, which we heard from last week, in the last week, the big testimony by the director of the FBI, Comey and others, was on searching desperately to try to find some kind of connection between the Trump campaign and Russia. And that has come up with a big fat zilch, big fat zero. And this was already predicated by members of, you know, of the intelligence community who have loyalties with the Democrats. And I'm speaking about former acting director Michael Morell, who was a Clinton campaign surrogate, and Obama's director of national intelligence, James Clapper. Basically, who both came out and said flat out, trying to lower expectations of these investigations, these committees, that there was no evidence, there's nothing there. Michael Morell famously said that there is smoke, but there's no fire, no fire at all. There's no campfire, there's no candle, there's not even a spark,
right,
and that's despite that lots of people are looking for it. And this is because the Democrats are actually scared. They've created such a hysteria, and they've created such a neo-McCarthyite era. They've attempted to turn these committees into a new House Un-American Activities Committee.
Yeah, you are 2.0.
I actually strongly encourage watching them, because they are really instructive on how absolutely paranoid and insane this political rhetoric can get. And that's all it was. They were reading from this Christopher Steele, this British former spy's saucy dossier, Golden Showers,
right,
as if it was fact, when no one has substantiated anything. And the one thing that could possibly be substantiated out there was proven wrong.
Right.
So it's really hysterical. And at this point, some of the more level heads are afraid within the Democratic Party that the base is expecting too much. They expect some golden or some silver bullet to come out of this that they could impeach Trump on. And here you have these intelligence figures loyal to the Democratic Party who are saying, well, actually, there's really nothing there, guys. It's, you know, it's just political theater.
Yeah. And, you know,
and then
the theater itself is getting
whether Russia actually had an effect on the election. And those are a little bit quieter right now. And the FBI is also conducting an investigation. The intelligence community, when Obama was in charge, said that there was evidence of this, but then they never presented it, and no one has given any indication that they have any.
Yeah, now what they're stepping back from that and like sort of parsing the language some, so that you know what they're saying is, well, you know, first of all, we were talking about something where effects would be felt at the very margins because everything was so close. And so a little bit of influence here through the, say, through media reports, through RT or whatever, might swing just enough votes to have impacted the election. And then others are saying it doesn't matter whether they actually impacted. We see a clear intent. And then when you look for evidence of that, it's actually a deduction because of the interests, you know, the natural interests of the Russian Federation in terms of geopolitics, that they might prefer someone who doesn't want to go to war with them to someone who looks like they do. And then one last thing, the real frightening thing about the stepping up of the rhetoric is that the Democrat Schiff himself said that this Russia definitely meddled with the election and it was an act of war, which I found very troubling.
Yeah, and he was called out for it on Tucker Carlson, and Tucker Carlson who has really stepped up his game in from his earlier incarnation back on Crossfire.
Yeah.
He asked him so when do the ICBMs fly? He challenged him. He said, "Oh yeah. Well, they attacked us. Well, then let's hit them. Let's hit them back. What are we going to do? We can't just let this stand." And you know, it just basically exposing the rhetoric for what it was. And all of this comes, you know, with the hilarious idea that American media, American state media like Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, or even Western media never took a stance on Russian elections or vice on American elections. No one had a problem when European Union leaders, multiple of them, endorsed Clinton, or when German or British state media outlets were completely against Trump. That wasn't influencing the election.
I mean,
it was just RT. And actually, at RT, you can blame me. Because my commentary on Crosstalk, where I voiced cautious optimism for a realist foreign policy platform of Trump, and then condemned his neoliberal domestic policies, that alone swung the election.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's something troubling about that, too. I pointed this out. I did Crosstalk yesterday, and I pointed out two things. One, I live in Austin, New York, which is where Sing Sing Prison is, which is where the Rosenbergs were executed during the HUAC 1.0 version back in the early 50s, okay? And the other is she just passed a week or two ago. Lynn Stewart was a friend of mine, and she spent 4 years of a 10-year prison sentence only because she had cancer that she was let out early, and then she passed. Over holding a press conference. Now, here we are. You're in Moscow. You do this work with RT. So do I do work with RT. They don't pay me.
And with many other news channels.
And others, with Press TV and others, both of us. Right. This is just part of what people do that are actually speaking on an international level. They speak to international press. And yet, you know, I'm looking at what happened to Lynn and what happened to the Rosenbergs. I mean, I'm a $4.75 cab ride from the electric chair at Sing Sing, okay? So it's a little unsettling. I mean, I'm not really paranoid, but, you know, this environment can and is probably intended to be very chilling.
It is chilling, and it has repercussions all the way down the line. Simply on a personal anecdotal note, I've gotten emails and contact from Russian Americans inside the United States that tell me that their children, simply because they have Russian surnames, are being endlessly and mercilessly harassed and bullied at school now, to the point where they have to pull them out of school.
Right.
And I don't think this is an isolated incident. And of course, it is. You know, it is just a tail end effect of this Russophobic hysteria. Right. And it's really disheartening. Myself having some Russian roots, when I lived in the United States, I growing up there, I can certainly understand where this is coming from. And I can't imagine the pressure that they're facing now.
You know, I mean, look, after September 11th, for example, you had these upticks, you know, you had wall-to-wall media coverage of, you know, Islam, the enemy, and all this stuff. and you know, kids were getting beat up. Sikhs, like a couple of instances of Sikhs who were wearing turbans being mistaken for Muslims and getting beat, you know, getting beat up on the street and stuff. And none of the PR campaigns that I've seen in the history of my life have been as broad and as deep and as constant and as loud as this anti-Russia campaign. And so, you know, there's a real danger for people.
Yeah, there's a yeah. potential of racism and real hate crimes. Yep. They're feeding into this. They certainly have a degree of culpability. I'm speaking of, you know, the liberal mainstream media and some members of Democratic members of Congress who are really
off the hook.
they're off the rocker. They're off the ranch. They're off the farm. I don't know where they are.
Gagoots, my grandfather would have said.
But yeah, it is past the point of amusement. It is past the point of being not just an international threat, you know, but potentially raising tensions with Russia. But it's becoming a threat to Americans who have Russian backgrounds at this. And, you know, that, of course, I mean, it's all part of the culture now because shows like The Americans feed into this and have been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
I can just imagine from the liberal press, the Western press here in Russia, if Russia was airing shows like The Americans, they would be saying that the Russian government is making its people hate Americans, and they would be calling it propaganda and so on. But, you know, of course, it's different when the shoe's on the other foot.
And here's something that's really Orwellian. It's like a double Orwellian. I don't know if that's like a double negative, which makes it a positive, or a double positive, which stays positive. But they are doing a mass showing of 1984 in April across the United States in theaters. And it's supposed to be showing essentially that, that's where we're living now under Trump and Putin, et cetera, and which is itself Orwellian, which is kind of cute. But the danger...
Let's touch on that for a second,
go ahead.
Actually.
Yeah.
Because Trump just inherited a massive surveillance state.
That's right.
That from Obama,
which spied on him apparently,
and now he was lambasted. He was mercilessly mocked by the liberal journalists that I follow. You know, that were accusing him of making things up and believing his own lies and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And now the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, which is not only investigating Trump's non-existent connections with Russia, but also investigating the illegal leaks that have occurred that led to Trump sacrificing Michael Flynn and others, this deep state leaks, these anonymous current and former officials speaking out.
And also the setting up of the network of distribution of information to facilitate that's
using
also
media as a sock puppet.
Yeah.
Particularly the Washington Post and the New York Times. And, Trump said, "I was wiretapped," quote, wiretapped unquote, in quotes, indicating that some form of surveillance. And this was mocked. And I just couldn't believe that people were mocking it. I'm like, do you understand, you know, from the Snowden revelations, from WikiLeaks, the scale of the surveillance state? Prism, the Five Eyes, Anglo-global spying cabal, what has been established here? Obama didn't wiretap Trump.
Right.
Obama wiretapped the whole friggin' world.
That's right, the world. So they just have to pull the Trump file.
Merkel, which is what
that was
Trump,
cute, wasn't it?
I mean, it was a jab, and of course the liberal media that still regard Obama as the savior Lion King were not amused by that at all.
He was quite restrained, actually, because he ignored it. He was asked twice about it. Both of the German reporters, there were four reporters, two Westerners, two Americans, I think, and two German reporters at this press conference, each asked a question. And first, a young woman, German woman, asked the question about it, and he just went right past that and answered the rest of her question. And then the second time, all he did was turn to her and smile and say, "Well, I guess we have something in common." And then he dropped it. I mean, it was very soft touch, very deft for him. I mean, he's supposed to be this bull in a china closet, and I thought it was very low key the way he did that.
Yeah, they also, of course, what they focused on during that, showing the superficiality and the partisanship here, they attacked him after prompting by the press that he didn't shake her hand there,
right.
Angela Merkel's hand during the photo op there. Of course, every handshake he has delivered, the press has mercilessly attacked as for its style. So he decided to deny them. And they attacked him for not shaking Merkel's hand, never minding that Trump had already shaken Merkel's hand since she arrived twice. He simply wasn't giving the press the red meat that they wanted to dissect the next day, so they just attacked him for not shaking hands.
I know, the whole thing was ridiculous.
When the reporter from Der Spiegel questioned him about his dangerous isolationist foreign policy, I really have to wonder at this redefinition of terms. You know, we're inventing new definitions. Right. Does anyone in the world believe that the U.S. is suddenly an isolationist country, or that what Trump is proposing foreign policy-wise is isolationism? Is détente with Russia isolationism?
Yeah.
I mean, just simply because he pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I mean, because the opposite, the only – if you are not a hegemonic, regime-changing, a global free trader, then the opposite of that, I mean, the only other choice is isolation.
Yeah,
there's nothing else in between there, foreign policy-wise.
And you look at the elements.
Ridiculous.
If you look at the elements, I mean, on the one hand, what the neocons and the neoliberals want to isolate Russia, and on the other hand, Trump wants to engage them, that he's the isolationist. I mean, it's inconsistent.
Yeah, it's just oxymoronic.
Yeah,
and of course, the idea that I've still just in the last week, I've still read Western reports that try to suggest that Russia is somehow internationally isolated, and I'm like, are you serious?
I know.
Like because the U.S. and a few countries in Western Europe, I mean, you know, there is the rest of the world out there, and not even all of Europe is on board with this, or has been for a long time.
Yeah.
These people are just solipsists. They're living in a bubble of their own propaganda.
And by the way, half the human population lives inside the isolation zone.
Let's look at that too. Let's go to because
we're getting close on time. Look at the implications in terms of this, you know, shifting international geopolitical climate, including what the trip to Asia that Tillerson just had, and some of the things that have fallen out of that. What's happening with Korea? What's happening also along Russia's border in Europe?
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about Rex Tillerson's trip to Asia. He's been an extremely quiet Secretary of State. He skipped their annual sermon about human rights report. He hasn't given press conferences, and everyone is really kind of upset about this. They don't know. It's kind of like, where's Waldo, where's T-Rex?
Well, there's a lot of people also that, you know, their daily job in the press was to sit in the briefing room at the Department of State and at the press conference every day, and he's not doing that either.
No, he's not. He's playing his cards very close to his chest, at least now, which I think is smart, because there's still battles going on about foreign policy within the Trump cabinet.
Within the State Department.
I mean, until the State Department and the intelligence community has the Trump political appointees in there, which every administration does.
Right.
And even after that, they'll still be needing a purge, rather bad, with all of the deep state leaks that have gone on. A lot of people were predicting really bad relations with China, and I didn't think so from the very beginning. I think he's willing to do business with China. I think this T-Rex trip was this kind of smoking room, gentlemen's, behind closed doors discussions. Agreed. There's a lot of saber rattling coming from the administration on North Korea. There was previous saber rattling from the Obama administration. There was all kinds of enhanced military drills on North Korea's border. I don't expect much to come out of it. I don't believe that Trump is going to launch a military assault on North Korea. I think this will be handled behind closed doors after some tough words, and I think that's where it's heading. But it also might help develop channels of communication between the administration and China, which were set off to an unshaky start with Trump's Taiwan comments, speaking to Taiwan and then about the South China Sea early out the gate. That was Tillerson himself during his hearings when he suggested that the U.S. could try to deny China access to the islands in the South China Sea on the other side of the world, which military people found all rather amusing and were scratching their heads like how exactly would we do that?
Yeah,
but I think it was probably meant to the U.S. doesn't have much leverage in negotiations with China. China's on the other side of the world. They're a growing military power. The U.S. owes large sums of money to China, probably for building that military. and the trade imbalance, is such that, U.S. companies need business in China and American consumers need Chinese goods. It's a frenemies type relationship. And the U.S. just doesn't have much leverage in it. So I think Trump was fishing around and looking for some leverage to shake things up.
He also gave them a big gift,
when
the TPP was sunk, and it was done, officially by Trump. That was a big gift to China's economy. I mean,
it was
billions of dollars.
Because the TPP was an anti-Chinese economic containment. I mean, that's exactly what it was.
Right.
Just like the European version, TEP was meant to lock Russia out. And the failure of these is, incidentally, they also would have extended American law to countries across, consumer law and corporate law to countries across the entire Pacific, which I think the countries in the Pacific, at least the people there, really dodged a bullet with that one.
And also a version of American law on steroids, because a lot of the protections, like for labor and others that are in the environment that are written into American law, wouldn't apply because they're outside that parameter of American law.
Yeah, and many countries have much more substantial
laws than
the United States in those categories. Anyway, it would have been a gift to American companies. They're the ones who wrote the TPP.
Right.
This perversity of Trump on some issues definitely being social conservative far right, and on some foreign policy and trade issues actually leaning more left in direction, it shows more evidence of this realignment in American politics. And whether it's a temporary flash in the pan Trump phenomenon or not, it is the inevitable course. Trump is just an early start. He's maybe ahead of his age, even the way politics has to go to fight this neoliberal technocratic center, which will need some support on both the right and the left, whether you want to call it populist or not, on either side, in order to get some traction there. And we have Trump doing all sorts of interesting things across the Middle East. He's a surge. He's giving more money to the Kurds. At the same time, evidently, the U.S. has stopped funding the Islamist rebels in Syria out of the quite euphemistically named MOM centers. The FSA, and their al-Qaeda allies are no longer getting money, arms, and salaries like they were under Obama. That is a huge change to me. That is exactly what Russia needs. And all Trump has to do to give them that is stop doing things. He's increased arms to the Kurds, which accepts no one except ISIS and the Turks. He's increasing drone strikes, even above Obama's level in Yemen, but they all actually seem targeting al-Qaeda, which at least tacitly Saudi Arabia has supported with their invasion there. He's increased troops into Syria, but it seems like they're actually intent on fighting ISIS. Right. They don't seem to be allying with the Turks or with the Saudis, which is what I would worry about for some dismemberment scenario,
right,
creating some kind of Salafistan in Raqqa. I don't see that happening yet.
Right.
And the neocons are pushing for it. But Trump seems to be doing something quite different. And there is more and more indication, very quietly, that Russian, Syrian, and U.S. military troops are actually cooperating.
And we're going to have to stop there. Mark, thank you very much. A pleasure as always.
Thanks, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.